Hello and welcome back to the Miraculous Being series. I'm your host and self-awareness coach, Shweta Shivraman, and this is a show where we discover, learn, and implement lessons from others' life journeys. Others who, I believe, epitomize miraculous in its truest spirit. Individuals who live life to the fullest, who worked hard on themselves to reach where they are, and are passionate in what they do. Today, we have a very, very special guest speaker. It is none other than Apoorva Purohit, an Indian businesswoman with over 3 decades of experience in the corporate world. She has worked across a variety of media businesses from radio to print to digital and was responsible for building and scaling up organizations like Radio City and Time Television. She's also worked on famed turnarounds like ZTV and Midday. She's an independent director at LDI Mindtree Limited, L&T Technology Services, Naveen Florin International Limited, and Marico Limited. Apoorva has been a leading voice in the Indian business landscape, advocating gender diversity, what ails it, and what organizations and leaders can do to improve this critical imperative. She is also the author of 2 national best-selling books, Lady, You're Not a Man, and Lady, You Are the Boss. Through her books, Apoorva aims to empower women and encourage them to achieve their full potential. She has been a winner of the Most Powerful Women in Business Awards for several years and recently won the Distinguished Alumni Award for her alma mater, IIM Bangalore. Apoorva has recently launched Azol Ventures, which aims to empower women self-help groups in rural India by creating a marketplace for the high-quality, local, and preservative-free food products they make using ancient wisdom and traditional agri-practices. I'm super excited to meet Apoorva, so let's dive in. Hi, Apoorva. So nice to have you here on the show. Thank you for giving us your time.
Not at all, Shweta. I think what you are doing with the podcast is really, really fundamentally required in the world today. So I'm glad to be part of it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I think when I was doing your introductions just before we got started, I've been fascinated by your journey, right? From media, running media businesses to entrepreneurship and that to authentic food, preservative free. I think it's so diverse. So would love to start from your journey and if you could highlight some pivotal moments of self-transformation for you through your journey.
So, you know, when we talk about pivotal moments, actually, it's only with hindsight you look back and say, okay, those were the 3 moments that sort of changed my life. But, yes. And then you join the dots and said, what made those moments pivotal? Because I think all of us go through a journey where there will be moments where we have opportunities, there will be moments where we will have challenges. But what transformed, let's say, a challenge into an opportunity? Yeah. Right? So, I, rather than talking about the pivotal moments, Shweta, I want to talk about for 2 minutes, and that's of course come with hindsight only, that what were my behavior patterns at that moment that made those moments pivotal. So I think The first thing, Shweta, I feel that as compared to a lot of my peers, friends, colleagues, family, friends, I was quite willing to take risks. So when an opportunity came, for example, I was running media companies from the buy side. And then the ZTV opportunity came, which was a huge quantum leap in my career. And I jumped at it. Many of my friends wouldn't have taken that call because it was a risky proposition. And you know, with risks, they can either work out or not work out. You'll only know later. So I think I was quite willing to take risks. The second time this happened was when from running large television networks, I got an opportunity to head Radio City. Now, Radio City was so much smaller than the big television networks that I was running. But it was a private equity owned company and I almost had a quasi-entrepreneurial role there. So I had a large stake. I was told that this is your baby. You run it the way you want to. We are just financial investors. And again, from a big place to a small place, but the learning, the growth, the opportunity to sort of almost own a company. And private equity was actually not looked at as a good place to be in because it was new. They always thought, oh, these are, you know, going to be very hardcore financial investors. They're going to be VCs, vultures. You know, those were the conversations that used to happen. But again, I took that risk. So I would say a willingness to take risk, a willingness to say, okay, let me try it. gave me the pivotal opportunities that transformed my career.
Right, right. And like you rightly said, right, when you take a risk, you don't know whether it's going to work out or not. And only time tells, right, in retrospection, how successful or not it was. So when you were going through challenges as you were jumping on from one risk to the other, what kept you going?
See, all of us will face challenges, okay? Only from the outside, the picture looks rosy.
Very.
Inside, when, especially when you are, you know, wanting to grow, willing to take risks, look at large opportunities, constantly there'll be challenges. So there'll be challenges like the 2007-8 financial challenge that happened, the economy going from up to down all the time, people challenges, within your industry challenges, the digital pivot that has happened and that has sort of come and transformed, changed so many industries. So constantly, and I worked for 32 years, so you can imagine that constantly there are different sets of challenges. I think what keeps one going is really, one, what I have observed is that if you want to succeed, you just have to persevere. I don't think there is any special thing that I've seen in people who have been very successful, except that they have not given up. So through a downturn, through an upturn, through external challenges, through internal mindset challenges, they've just kept at it. And that is what I sort of tell everybody, especially, you know, women a little who have sort of reached senior levels. They don't know what to do with their careers after that. I keep on telling them that, see, it is all about perseverance and not giving up.
Yeah.
You just have to know, it could be in the career path that you have chosen. It could be saying that, okay, I've done there, achieved a lot here, but I want to do something else. But you just have to keep going. I think that sort of keeps me motivated ahead, that I cannot give up. The second bit is that you realize fairly early on, and I became a leader at a fairly young age. I was barely 30 when I became a CEO. That it's all about people. So if you get the type of people around you right, if you really value add to them so that they stay with you, and if you concentrate on empowering and engaging them, then you can achieve anything.
Yeah, beautiful. So persevere at all costs and trust the people you're with.
Correct, correct.
Okay. And I think this beautifully ties into the theme of your second book, right? Lady, You're Not a Boss, where you are specifically targeting senior leaders. And I'm sure a lot of listeners here are also in that age group where maybe they've done those 10, 12 years of climbing the corporate ladder, achieved some success, but suddenly hit a stagnation, right? Where they're not sure what next or where will that next fuel comes from, because that 0 to 1 leg is always very fulfilling because you're doing constantly. And then you hit that pause, right? So what would you share for probably listeners who are in that stage and maybe some themes from your book that stand out for them?
Pita, so I've observed this increasingly that, you know, at a time that we were growing up and working, there were very few women. Okay. Today, I see that there are, through all the pushes that diversity agendas across organizations, your kind of podcasts have made, that there are a lot of push that has happened in building the ratio of diversity. And as a consequence, there are a fair amount of middle and senior level women in many industries. Now they've reached, they become vice president, they become senior vice president, general manager, etc. And suddenly in their mid 40s, they're going through a stagnation point, as you very rightly put it, because they've achieved success better than their aunts, mothers, sisters have, but now they don't know what to do. They're feeling a little burnt out, suddenly empty nest is hitting them, etc. So I just say that, you know, again, going back to what I said, you have to keep at it. Now you can either look at it as a challenge, oh, I've got his stagnation. I only understand IT. I only understand finance. I don't know anything else. Or you can say, okay, you know, again, there is an opportunity to reinvent myself. Again, I've been given a space where I have place for my growth. Children have grown up and gone. Husbands have got well-trained. I now have time and the experience to reinvent. And in this reinvention, it is not about saying I did finance or I did shared services or I did IT and therefore let me look for another such opportunity. It is about saying I have learned these skills. So for example, I said that I have learned how to run organizations. I have learned how to scale up organizations. I have started three organizations from zero and taken them to some success. So it's not about being part of media. It's saying that I've learned to run organizations. So now I can do a food organization also. I can do any organization. So recognizing the pattern behind your skill set and experience and applying the pattern to something else and reinventing. I think that's how I would encourage women to start thinking about that.
Love that perspective. Recognizing the pattern behind our skill sets. Powerful. Yeah. We often get stuck with that, right? What function, what domain we are in.
Yes.
Right? Interesting. And it kind of takes me to the other book that you have also, right? That Lady, You're Not a Man, where you're talking about younger audiences. And I think I've heard you share in one of the interviews that a lot of times women, you know, go through the trap of being somebody's something. Right. So when we are just starting careers, just starting families, newly married, I think a lot of identity gets lost. And then, of course, motherhood and the next journey there. Right. So what is your take on that? And how can we kind of reconnect or kind of stay in touch with our true self as we go through these identities?
I think our society, and I'm not talking only about Indian society, everywhere the expectation always is that after marriage, the woman needs to adapt. The woman needs to adjust from changing your surname to saying that now my new family's value system. And plus you're building your own family. Plus there's your husband's family. And somewhere in trying to say that, okay, now I'm going to be a mother, I'm a wife, I'm a daughter-in-law, I'm a sister-in-law, I'm Mrs. Sharma or Mrs. Iyer, you forget who you are as a person. Now, all of us, you know, I talk about my age, maybe women in their mid-40s and 50s. We didn't know any better. At that time, this was what it was. So you didn't think too much about it. You just went along with the flow. And then 20, 30 years later, you realize I've forgotten my hobbies. I've forgotten my friends. I've forgotten who I was as a person at 21. And then I say again that it's not too late. It's okay. You may be 45, you may be 50. It's okay. Rediscover, go back and remember what you like. Did you like singing? Did you like traveling? Were you passionate about a particular set of friends whom you lost touch with? Reconnect with them. Reconnect with who you were at 21. And now you have the space. No, so don't worry that, okay, last 20 years I didn't do anything. Now you have the time to. So encourage that part of yourself. To the younger girls, I say, Shweta, that, okay, you have not made the mistakes we made. So don't lose touch with who you are. And I see, I'm so impressed with the younger girls of today. I mean, one of my nephews got married and his wife very clearly cataloged a few things, saying, I'm an only daughter. I'm the only child. I know your parents are important to you. Similarly, my parents are important to me. So if you spend weekends with them, I will spend weekends with my parents. I like these hobbies. So I will do this. It's okay if we do things separately. Whereas we sort of just subsumed ourselves in what our families and husbands wanted. So right. I think I encourage younger girls to think like that.
True. Absolutely. Yeah. I think I remember Maya Angelou's quote, right? That I know better, I do better, right? So your sharing reminded me of that saying that now that as we know better collectively as a generation, we do better in terms of prioritizing ourselves, our needs and our wants. Right. And you just like touched upon the whole Dear Girl series, and I told you I've been a big fan of all of those posts. But I think one thing that really struck to me was the whole concept of, you know, you can have everything, but not all at once. I think in our generation, at least I know peers of mine and, you know, clients of mine, there is always this pressure of, you know, chasing, impatience, saying that you're missing out or, you know, you should have had this, but you should have had this yesterday, right? Like today is too late. What would you say to us impatient lot as a generation?
I think two things are happening to this generation, the one that you call the impatient lot, very rightly. One is that, of course, I'm talking about women. For women, it was always thus that suddenly there were so many expectations, so many roles you had to fulfill. And especially for working women, it was an additional, I call it deliberately, a burden that you are also got to be a good executive and a good manager, got to be a good wife, a good mother. And if you are not one of these, then people will point fingers at you. So there was a lot of expectations, and all young women tried to perfect all this, that I have to be the best mother, wife, manager, executive, and also at the same time, why should I lose out on learning to do pottery? And that, and as a consequence, so many of them have got burnt out. And, you know, we talked about the stagnation. Part of the stagnation is that they've just done so much that they've just got burnt out in their mid-40s. Now, added to that is the current generation, where suddenly you all have so many opportunities, so many interests that are drawing you in different directions. Okay, so you go through an Insta feed, you can do 5 different things to self-improve. You can have 10 different hobbies, 100 different places you have need to visit. Okay, yeah. So that's putting an additional burden, because now so many choices.
Yeah.
And then this desire that I should do this. And then I find that the younger generation in this impatience is also becoming a bit more superficial. So they're not becoming adept at anything because they're not doing deep enough engagement.
Right.
It's a tick mark. Mm. Travel also, okay, let me go now quickly. Let me click a photo next to the Eiffel Tower. Let me click a photo at the on the bridge and then go back and tell everybody I visited Paris. Whereas spending time and admiring something, that's gone, right? So what I say is that, yes, there is FOMO. But you should also now start practicing JOMO, joy of missing out.
Right.
It is okay to let go of certain things. And why is it okay? Not because you should do fewer things. I'm saying that you let go so that, because understand that you all are all going to have a 30, 40, 50 year active, productive career and life. Mm-hmm. You can pull off everything. Think of it as I have 10, 5 years to achieve certain things. So these 5 years are devoted to building my career. These 5 years, my priority will become, maybe I'll have a family. So I need to certainly devote some time with my children. These 5 years is about something else. These 5 years, my aging parents. So if you break it up like that now and have the confidence in yourself and that you will manage to do everything. It's not going to happen in this decade, but it will certainly happen in the next decade for you.
Right. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I think a lot of times we forget that we do have that active 30, 40 year period. It doesn't have to happen all at once and now.
Correct.
Lovely. And the other thing that I always, see in a lot of women clients that I work with is that, you know, they're great at what they do. They manage multiple responsibilities effortlessly. But still at some level, they hesitate to kind of voice out their preferences, ask for what they want, even in today's day and age, right? So where do you think this comes from and how can we probably start to overcome it?
Shweta, this very clearly comes from the socialization that is done with young girls and daughters of ours. And, you know, I think we bring up our daughters very differently from how we bring up our sons. Okay, so the sons are so tell you can achieve everything, you can occupy as much space as you want, be as rambunctious, shout, scream, be as in a nice manner, but just the world is your oyster. For the women, it's always, you know, don't make so much noise, don't talk so loudly, don't laugh, don't show your teeth, why are you wearing red lipstick, why are you wearing short clothes, why are you staying out so late? In a sense, parents do it to protect. Yeah. But in that messaging that is constantly being given, your girls are always told what you can't do, whereas boys are told what you can do. So in this can't do, in our hearts, we have grown up with saying, oh, am I deserving of this? Am I worthy of this? Can I talk? If I talk, how will I be perceived? Will I be seen as that loud, aggressive woman? So we've been taught that, no, you have to be sweet and nice and adaptable and collaborative. And in this, we forget that you have to collaborate with yourself also, no?
Yeah.
So as a consequence, asking for raises, asking for promotions, asking for, or even voicing your opinion,
mm-hmm.
almost we have to force ourselves. And it continues. I mean, I sit on so many boards. There have been occasions where I've been trying to say something, somebody's cut me, and I've kept quiet. And I recognize this. Increasingly now I've started saying, hello, you interrupted me, let me finish. Earlier, I wouldn't do that. So even in voicing our opinion, forget asking for a promotion or raise, we hesitate. And we have to recognize this pattern that has been forced on us. Only once you recognize this pattern, you will be able to say, okay, now I need to overcome this. I am deserving.
Yeah. And very interesting that you brought out the whole point about asking for promotions as well, right? Because that is something I think I remember even early in my career, I used to also say this, you know, my work should speak for itself. I should not have to go and ask for a promotion. And obviously the most obvious thing will happen. You'll get passed over for somebody else who asked, right? And it's very hard for us to actually articulate those things. And I think it comes back to what you just shared, that we are constantly worried about how we are perceived. Right. And that fear is there in us so deep. I'm not sure, even if we are aware of it, how do we kind of overcome that fear of judgment to be able to stand for ourselves and voice what we'd like?
It is very difficult. It is very difficult. So, you know, what I thought of as a kind of a practice I tell women to do and girls to do is two things. One is that you every morning, you first, when you're talking to yourself, we do a lot of self-talk in our minds all the time we're doing. And then you'll realize that a lot of self-talk is self-critical talk. Okay, you know, oh, you didn't do this right, the presentation, how you, now, you know, you have to, you. So we're constantly criticizing ourselves. Whereas I feel you have to quickly change that pattern. Again, difficult to do, but you can do it. Change that pattern to say, okay, maybe these are the three things that I've done wrong or mistakes I've made, but what are the three, four things I've done right? What are my abilities? What are my talents? So that you have to cultivate almost groom the inner cheerleader.
Mm-hmm.
The inner self critic is very strong, but the inner cheerleader, you have to stand up and keep patting yourself. Oh, you're looking good girl, good girl, good girl. That's one thing. Constantly, you know, balance that cheerleader and critic inside you. Second thing is that you, and I think I've taught this successfully to young girls, is that when you sort of wanting to talk about yourself, think of yourself in the third person. We are very good at young talking about our colleagues and praising, oh, you know, Shweta, you did a great podcast. Oh, you know, so think of yourself, oh, Apurva, you know, and then the moment you start thinking of yourself in the third person, you'll be able to say good things about her better than you are when you think of yourself as I. So these are just little tricks that sort of help us.
I can totally relate to that because I think whenever we talk about, you know, like if our friend were to come to us with that problem, you know, we will never be that harsh on them as probably our inner critic would be saying, how could you have been so stupid to have done that, right? How could you let this mistake happen? So yeah, very interesting. So amplify our inner cheerleader and think of ourselves in third person. I like that. Right. And I think, you know, when you were talking about this whole perspective around how women are raised and how men are raised, I think there is this constant thing about, you know, you can't do it, you can't do this, you can't do that. And I think that when we grow up as women, we suddenly are also not able to realize, like, you know, you said that, can you look at what your skills are, what your abilities are, what your strengths are? I think constantly being heard that you can't do this, you can't do that. When you ask women saying, what are your strengths? A lot of times it's a pause, right? You're not able to even see your own strengths. So if there are probably women listening in here who are still not able to recognize what they are good at, what they bring to the table, right? Then they can articulate that. So how would you say that they can start their journey of recognizing their own strengths?
I think it really comes from first quietening all the noise around you. And that noise comes from wanting to please everybody around you or people's expectations of you or your expectations of yourself. I think first you have to quieten all that. You have to say that, okay, I'm not going to listen to anything. And then sort of try and figure out how you can get into that quiet space. And it's an internal journey finally, okay?
Yeah.
So everything, the transformation has to happen all within. So you find that quiet space in your mind. And then I think you sort of need to very objectively look at your last 10 years of working or your, you know, life so far. And where are the points that you did well for yourself? Where are the points you felt good about yourself? More than doing well as perceived by somebody else, where you felt good about yourself. So I think that's the second thing. So you sort of now start listing down the three, four, five things that where you felt good or you did well.
Mm-hmm.
Then also get out of this zone of measuring yourself against others. Oh, see, for all of us, the scale has to be ours. We cannot say that this scale of success is as defined by my parents who said do IIT and then you, or by my neighbor who has this fancy car and a fancy house, or by my colleague who's got a promotion. My scale is my own. Now, what is so difficult? See, one is to figure out your abilities. Second thing, to be able to realize, work on the scale you will measure yourself against. Now, I may say that my scale is how good a friend I was. I don't want to be vice president. How good a friend or devoted family member I was. Or how many countries I visited. Or how good I was at music. All our scales have to be different. We are unique individuals. Why should my scale be the same as my neighbors or my colleagues? Yeah. Once you have identified that scale, only against that you measure, no? People make that mistake of not getting that scale right.
Right. Yeah. True. Very true. I think there was this quote that I remember reading somewhere where they said that success can be different, but satisfaction is very unique to you. Success can be collective, what everybody defines as success, but satisfaction is something that only you feel connected to because of that. So when you chase that satisfaction,
yes,
that feeling of goodness, saying that, oh, this felt good for me.
Yes.
Then, you know, then the scale is yours.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Very interesting. And I know that we can keep going on and on, but in the interest of time, just wanted to ask you, saying that, you know, you've authored two books. What was the genesis behind that? And what was the message that you hoped to share with women across age groups through both of those books?
So, when I first started working and then I was running companies, I would recruit a lot of women, okay? Because in my mind, men, women, all were equal. But I would also realize that within the first 5 years, most of the women were leaving. They were getting married and then priorities changed and those became priority one. They didn't have support systems, whatever, whatever. They hadn't had role models in their families who had done both. And now talking about 20, 30 years ago. So that's when the first book, I wrote it around 15 years ago, I think, when I wanted to sort of give messages to women that, listen, you can balance both. It's not so, if I can do it and I'm just like you, why can't you do it? So these are some tips to how to manage everything. So of course, I'm not saying do either or, you can do both, but you need to work out practical ways of giving best to both. So that's the lady, you're not a man. Whereas, you know, talking about marriage and husband's transfer and little children and expectations and learning to balance. Then I said, I've done my job. It continues to be a bestseller. And so many women writing into me and saying they changed my life. And now I know what to do from small towns, big towns, etc. 10 years later, I thought I'd done my job and, you know, to encourage young girls to stay in the workforce. When I came across these senior women who had reached the point that we discussed earlier, mid-levels and stagnation. And then they were, again, at that stage, they just got tired of fighting. I fought. I fought to work. I fought to stay connected to my career despite marriage and children. I fought for so many things. I fought for my voice. Now I don't want to do anymore. But this message through the second book, Lady or the Boss, is no, don't think of it as a fight. But you have to keep going. You can't give up. You've achieved so much. Not only for you, but for the next generation also. We don't have enough women role models. You have to now become a role model. And for being a role model, how can you still continue to grow? How can you still continue to evolve? That was the genesis of the second book.
Right, right. Such powerful messages. I'm sure it's still touching many, many people's hearts with every word. Thank you for writing those books, I'm sure. What is it that, is there anything that you feel like, you know, is your journey as an author, how was it different from your journey as a corporate leader or as an entrepreneur?
See, I think that I would rather talk about the similarity between the two. And what you realize is that if you, whether you're a leader or an author, if you're, it's about you. How can I do well? How can I succeed? How can I be a famous author? How can I be? Then nothing is going to work out. Whereas if you think that as a leader, how can I value add to the executives who work with me? How can I make their life better? you'll be a good leader. Similarly, as at least I thought that when I write these books, it's not about me. It's not about how I achieve. It's about telling you that these are your pain points and these are some practical tips that I have learned. I understand you. Our journeys are similar. Maybe you can learn some lessons from what I did right and from what I did wrong. Mm-hmm. So that then you evolve. So the moment one starts thinking of the other party in the equation, I think the relationship and success then comes, or popularity or ability to connect with people happen. So many women write to me and they say, how did you know this is happening in our life? Because this particular chapter is exactly as if you were peeking into our bedroom.
Yeah.
So my point is that, you know, many of the things that we are going through are similar. Don't just see the outward manifestation, but our inner lives are very similar.
Yeah.
And then I think they also feel very, both emboldened, encouraged, and, you know, I'm not alone and less lonely.
Beautiful. So thinking of the other, and I'm sensing the same similarity of looking beyond the symptoms to the patterns, right?
Yeah.
Of our thinking and behaving patterns, and there's always a similarity there.
Yes, yes.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Apurva. Are you ready for the rapid fire?
I am. Don't be tough on me.
No, we'll go very easy. Yeah. Morning person or night owl?
Neither. I'm an 8 to 10 person.
I like this. This is the first time I'm hearing that. 8 to 10 person. Books, movies, podcasts?
Books.
Top 3 books that you ever read?
I'm a big fiction fan. So I recently read the Mick Herron series, The Slow Horses. It's a spy thrillers. Beautifully written. So it's an entire series. I just devoured it. One. Second, I think Socrates Express by Eric Weiner. You know, he's sort of encapsulated all the philosophers and explained it in beautifully simple language, the different philosophers and what their thinking was. That's my second book. Third book, a friend gifted me, Gentlemen in Moscow. Very nice book. I love elegant prose. And I think all three had that.
Lovely. I've read Gentlemen in Moscow. And yeah, I agree. It's beautiful. It's almost poetic. Yeah. Lovely. And Apurva, if you were to think of, say, role models in your life, and maybe what were the qualities in them that you admired?
I really, really admire people who, you know, think, are very positive thinkers. I mean, everybody goes through challenges, but there are people who will do meh. Then there are people who I call the suffering Sitas. In my books also I've written about, who are also always suffering. And there are the positive thinkers. They also have challenges. My mother's one, my husband's another, a few people in my office currently in our startup, very positive. And despite whatever they're facing, they just think positive first and do positive. I really like such people.
Nothing. Very interesting. And if you had to describe the pandemic for you in one word, what would that be?
Quiet. And I think, again, referring to that, I thought many bad things happened, unfortunately. But the one thing that I really felt, suddenly there was so much quiet. There was no traffic noise. There was no, and there were no people around you. And there was no, that sort of quietened your mind and helped you reflect. So that bit of the pandemic, I take back.
Beautiful. Quiet. Okay. Mm-hmm. Non-negotiables, if any, in your daily routines?
So clearly my exercise routine, my walks, etc. And in the night, reading. Because if I don't read, I'm not able to sleep well. So,
I can see how fiction goes with that. Yeah.
And crime fiction. Imagine I'm telling somebody, crime fiction helps me de-stress.
Whatever works. I just had a podcast conversation a while ago and they said stupid TV before sleep, right? Yeah. And that was their unwind, de-stress routine. So whatever works for us. Yeah. Lovely. What does your best version look like, Apurva, for you?
I think my best version is wherever I am, whether I'm at work or at a party or with somebody, if they think that, oh, she made a difference. So I think that's my best version. So whatever occasion, if I can make a difference to that particular moment.
Powerful. Yeah. Okay. One thing you wish you'd known when you were younger.
Many things, but I think one thing I wish I'd known was really what I now say is that chill. Don't put so much pressure on yourself. Mm-hmm. You do have goals, do have ambitions, do have aspirations, but don't put so much pressure on yourself. It will happen.
Yeah, beautiful. That almost felt like you were telling me, but okay. I'm sure there are many listeners who will feel the same way. Okay. One message that you might have for listeners who are probably on their journey of self-transformation, maybe just beginning or in somewhere in between, what would you share with them?
I think throughout the podcast, we have discussed different ways, but I would again, you know, on this journey of self-transformation, the one point I would tell people, apart from everything, quiet, reflect, look within, don't measure yourself against other people, etc., etc., all the points that I've earlier made. One thing I would definitely say is don't make self-transformation a list. Because that again, you will put pressure on yourself. Okay, my God, now that I have heard this podcast or I'm on this journey, these are the things. These are the 10 things I have to do if I have to transform. I have to learn how to do pottery. I have to travel to. It'll put a burden on you. What is self-transformation? Self-transformation, yes, you have that broad goal that every time you want to become better and better, you have to feel more satisfied and happier. Many things will happen organically. Open yourselves out. Most important, be adaptable. Be, you know how they say that your best exercise is when your muscles are loose, not when you tighten your muscles.
Yeah.
That's when the maximum impact happens. So how do you lose? I mean, I'll just tell you that from running large organizations to a startup, Shweta, I mean, I had to go from having this massive office, 12,000 people reporting it, to figuring out how to do the Xeroxing myself and working out of a co-working space. So you have to, and at the age of 57, from where to where, you're starting back from zero, okay? And at an older age, it's a shock. It's on the system. But also, I feel that I changed as a person. And that is because I kept myself, okay, adaptable, agile. So what if I don't have thousands of people reporting into me? So what if I have to start from printing and Xeroxing myself? So what if I have to learn a new industry, about a new industry? It's okay. So my message on self-transformation, not a list, and allow it to happen organically, but keep yourself open, agile, and adaptable.
Right. Amazing. I'm sure that all the things that you shared here would be so, so valuable for our listeners and for me. I think this has been such a packed episode. We are just like right on time, and it has been such an amazing, insightful conversation. Thank you so much, Apoorva. Thank you so much for taking your time and for being here.
Not at all. I think you expected the rapid fire to be one word. I gave you lots of sentences, so apologize for that. But
not at all. Rapid fire is always like, it's just more for the feel of it. But yeah, paragraphs are equally acceptable.
Okay, Shweta. So nice talking.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Not at all, my dear.